Hello, my name is Alex DeBoer, and you're listening to CITR's Vancouver COVID Update. Today, Tuesday, March 24th, I had the chance to speak with Moira Whiten, a health reporter for the TAI. Moira has been doing some excellent reporting on how women are being disproportionately affected by COVID-19. She joined me to discuss her recent reporting on how unemployment, childcare responsibilities, and risk of domestic violence are impacting women in the Lower Mainland.
Hey, Alex, how are you?
Hey, good. How are you, Moira?
Good, thanks. Can you hear me okay?
I can. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Great. So you've been doing reporting for the TAI on how women are being disproportionately impacted by this COVID pandemic. And you wrote an article yesterday as well as one on March 19th that were both really great. And in the one you wrote on March 19th, the first line is that you write is that women are on the financial front lines of the COVID-19 pandemic. So I wondered if you could just start out by telling me generally what you mean by that.
Sure. Thanks so much for having me on. So I think with this line and kind of raising the stakes as it is, like in my piece with the TAI, I'm trying to talk about the precariousness of labor, and specifically how a lot of the jobs that women are socially and economically and, you know, politically perhaps more predisposed to being in. So I'm talking about childcare, I'm talking about healthcare, I'm talking about kind of that the caregiving work that women are more seen in and more present in. How those are actually, not only are they literally on the front lines of being more likely to be infected in those jobs, but women are also more likely to have to take unpaid time off, to have to quarantine themselves, to care for a family member, to have to pay for childcare because it's seen as their responsibility if they're still able to work during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. So really it is about the financial loss and the financial pressures that women are under given their distribution in the labor force.
Right, and you write that a large percentage of nurses are women, as well as other medical support workers. But also you have a statistic you pulled up about minimum wage earners, which is that women are 59% of minimum wage earners in Canada. And you also mentioned how a lot of these women, or you interview Professor Adshade actually from UBC, and she talks also about how a lot of these women are racialized. So I was wondering, could you tell me a little bit more about that?
Definitely. Vancouver is an extremely multicultural city, first of all. But when we talk about racialized women, we often see racialized women in lower skilled, or not lower skilled, lower reimbursed labor. So we see racialized women disproportionately represented in minimum wage and serving jobs, in food service jobs. I believe at the Lynn Valley Care Center, where there's been an outbreak, a vast majority of the workforce there is Filipina. Mm-hmm. And for people who are here in Canada on temporary foreign worker agreements. So there really has been, both through policy and through simply like barriers to employment for women and women who are racialized, not as many opportunities for them in other sectors and in higher paying positions. So not only are we seeing that, they're at risk and don't have any protections if they do get sick on the job with healthcare workers, with long-term care workers. We saw how that exacerbated the Lynn Valley Care Center outbreak. Mm-hmm. But also, they're more likely to lose their jobs when people aren't allowed to go out, when they aren't allowed, when we aren't eating in restaurants or going to bars or buying clothes, anything like that. So there really is, like, I think there's so much here that I can barely get into it, and I barely got into it in the piece. I think it really comes down to who is seen as worth protecting. There's been two decades of degradation for long-term care workers for their collective agreements in the province, and while those have been renegotiated out, they've been renegotiated with much more privatization, much less vacation pay, much less sick leave, etc. So there really has been, like, this degradation of labor standards. I wrote about that in a piece a few weeks ago that makes long-term care workers, who are a vast majority racialized women, particularly vulnerable.
Yeah, totally. This crisis is exposing problems that have been building up over years. So you write that women are also impacted by the social isolation people are being encouraged to do now, and that's being enforced, in fact. So where a parent, a mother might have had access to grandparents or extended family to look after their children, now that's not so much of an option. So that's that childcare is often falling back on women. So
no, that's a really good point. And Dr. Adshay spoke really well to this. She's been a great person to be in touch with on this. But I think people assume that families and that women have an extended network to rely on if childcare falls through. If a child is sick for the day, like, can they go to their grandparents, to their aunts, to a friend's mm-hmm. place? But not only is that now not available to everyone, it didn't exist previously for everyone. So for women who've come over on a temporary visa with a child or with a spouse or with their child alone, like, they don't have an extended network of people, of family to take care of. So I think this is really bringing to the forefront for, you know, many of us. My grandma took care of me when I was sick, or took me to the doctor when my mom was at work and I had to leave school. But that's not the norm for everyone, and especially as people and women are working later and later into their life, like, that second generation of help, mm-hmm. just structurally it's not there anymore. And now with the pandemic, like, it's physically not there.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then in the piece you wrote that was published yesterday for the Tai, you focus on women who are accessing shelter services. So these services are especially hard hit right now. Can you explain sort of generally what's going on with shelters that offer housing to women in the Lower Mainland? Like, how are they being impacted right now?
Definitely. So there's kind of two spheres of problems right now. Shelters that support women and families living in poverty or who are experiencing homelessness, they're having a really big problem with maintaining staff and maintaining services that they can offer to women while also maintaining social distancing. You know, at the Downtown Eastside Women's Center, I had a really extensive conversation with them for my piece in the Tai, and they are now having to extend lunch hours so that fewer women can come in and they can serve the same amount of about 100 women that they serve lunch to every day. Mm-hmm. And they're saying that, you know, if they were to have an outbreak, that would be devastating for, like, the meals that these women rely on. It would also be devastating for the health and safety of people in the Downtown East Side. My colleague Chris Chung did a really good piece on how COVID-19 could spread like wildfire through the Downtown East Side as there isn't enough sanitation. So that's extremely related to this. The other sphere of issue is that transition houses, which support women and children experiencing domestic violence, and kind of, you know, which obviously, you know, those women come from all walks of life. There's mm-hmm. no geographic concentration of that problem necessarily.
Yeah.
They're anticipating a spike in need for their services because of, you know, the pressures that isolation and lack of job and financial issues put on families and that have been shown to exacerbate abuse and abusive behaviors. And so these transition houses are already working at 100 or over 100% capacity. And now with new distancing guidelines, with staff hours having to be redirected towards cleaning and kind of the communal living spaces that they really rely on for building community and building trust between the women, they're not really sure how they're going to accommodate that expected need as it grows. Yeah. So yeah, there's really, like, women of all walks of life who may be experiencing violence or homelessness or poverty, they're really coming up against and beyond the cap of services that are available to them.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I'm sure you heard the BCNDP's $5 billion relief package announcement yesterday, and I'm not sure how much time you've had to dig into the details, but do you see any of that funding going to support shelters or other services that help vulnerable women in the Lower Mainland?
So I do see some of that money flowing to them. The minister's also announced a vulnerable communities working group in that press conference. And so, or I think it was one on Saturday. Sorry, these all run together.
I know.
I was listening to every press conference this week and weekend. But anyways, so yeah, Minister Robinson and Minister Simpson of Housing and of Poverty Reduction, they announced a vulnerable communities working group on the weekend. And I expect that that working group will help funnel that frontline money that was announced in the relief package by Premier Horgan into these communities. Sounds like BC Housing has been actually working quite collaboratively. Shelters and transition houses do have pandemic plans, so now they're working on kind of coordinating action. But it will be very much at the community level and community specifically telling this working group what they need. So hopefully that can be coordinated at a slightly higher level and get everyone what they need faster. I think I'm sounding very optimistic, and I don't mean to sound naive that everything will work exactly the way everyone wants to. But I do think that there is a really strong lobby, and these organizations are used to advocating for what they need. And I think that especially with a federal commitment to funding for women's shelters, this is very much on the radar of something that the government needs to address.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think a big piece here is just timing, right? There is a lot of money that's been offered up by the federal and provincial governments, but it's when can people access it? When can shelters access it in this case? So I'm not sure if you know anything about that in terms of like when shelters will see money flowing in.
Right, and your guess is as good as mine. I know that the House of Commons is meeting with a reduced quorum today to hopefully pass the emergency legislation that would include this funding. But we've already seen concerns about people not being able to even apply for emergency care and relief benefits or EI until next month, and maybe not receiving it for weeks after. So yeah, I really do think timing is going to be of the essence here. I know BC's benefit will likely not be flowing until the end of April, early May at the earliest. The $1,000 for workers directly unemployed because of the pandemic. So yeah, I think there are a lot of promises right now, but people are very, like, it's urgent, and people are not really concerned with what the help is. They're concerned with when it is, which I don't think is a bad perspective to take. I think imperfect action now would likely help a number of these problems more than perfect action in a few weeks.
And so if anyone is listening and wants to help out any women's shelters or services in Vancouver or the Lower Mainland, do a lot of these organizations have like online donation options?
They definitely do. So the Downtown Eastside Women's Center, on their website, you can, I'll send you the link to add into the show notes.
Great, yeah.
But you can donate to them online. You can also donate to a number of more like branching organizations. So the United Way of the Lower Mainland flows money to these to shelters. And you can also donate to the Bloom Group, which is a nonprofit network of shelters in the Lower Mainland, and to the BC Society of Transition Houses, which is doing a lot of advocacy on behalf of all of the transition houses in the province.
Amazing. Okay, that's great to know. So yeah, that's it for me, I think. Thank you very much for taking the time on such short notice to speak with me about your reporting. It's really excellent, and I appreciate you sharing your knowledge with me.
Thank you so much for your reporting, Alex. I'm really happy to be able to contribute.
Totally. Okay, well, thanks again, and I'll talk to you probably soon.
My pleasure. See you soon. Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening. This piece was produced by me, Alex DeBoer. Special thanks to Moira Whiten. And tune in again tomorrow at 3 p.m. on CITR 11.9 FM for another Vancouver COVID update. Take care.